Did you get a filling done by your dentist and it still hurts? Get a second opinion from a biomedically trained dentist at Dental Pros of Utah. Rebuild your teeth layer by layer with Kevlar fibers. You won't ever have tooth sensitivity ever again. DentalProsOfUtah.com, 801-756-0360. That's 801-756-0360, DentalProsOfUtah.com. Let's welcome in. Let's talk some recruiting. Let's talk Elite 11 with Greg Biggins. He's a national recruiting analyst for Fox Sports and Scout.com. What's up, Greg?
What's up, fellas? How are you guys?
We're fantastic, man. Excited to talk some football in the offseason. Go ahead. No, what were you saying?
No, I was just saying football is always a beautiful thing, right?
Indeed, especially the Elite 11, right? Because the most important position, at least according to the fans, is the quarterback position. And you were covering the Elite 11 camp, everyone's intrigued. The BYU fan base is intrigued by one particular guy, Tanner McKee. But give us a little bit of a breakdown of the other quarterbacks and what they looked like and who stood out to you in the Elite 11.
So, I mean, it was a big group. It's 24. They kind of do it a little differently now. You know, I actually was there from the beginning working at Student Sports when the event first started out. It was originally just 12. It's called the Elite 11, but it's always been 12 guys. It just makes it easier for roommate purposes and warming up. But the last couple of years, they've done it differently where they invite 24 kids, and then they compete for 3 days, and then they'll pick 12 who will go to the opening finals in Beaverton, Oregon, on the Nike campus. So 24 guys, a lot of guys, probably, the top three or four guys for me, honestly, I would put Tanner up there. He didn't work out that last day on Sunday. He's made a commitment since he was, I think he said 9 years old, that he's not going to ever do anything athletically on a Sunday, because of his LDS faith, which I have so much respect for. But he was tremendous those first 2 days, and obviously he got in only doing two of the three workouts. That kind of showed you how good he was. I love Trevor Lawrence. He's kind of everybody's number one guy, not just quarterback, but number one overall recruit in the nation. He's a big 6'5 kid out of Georgia who's going to Clemson. Tremendous talent. Justin Fields is a kid who's going to Penn State, and tremendous upside with him as well. Kind of more West Coast. Those guys did very well. Matt Corral, Long Beach Poly kid from Southern California going to USC. It was very strong. Kid Dorian Thompson Robinson from Bishop Gorman High School, really well-known program. He's going to UCLA. So, I mean, honestly, it was a good group, and I know it was tough for those guys to just pick 12 to go, but overall, I thought it was a really strong class.
Yeah, it is a strong class. Trent Dilfer said that it was one of the most, if not the most, talented classes that they've brought in. How long have you been covering the Elite 11, and would you echo those same sentiments?
Yeah, no doubt. Like I said, I've been covering it from the beginning, so I don't know exactly how many years it's been in existence. I want to say maybe like 15, 16 years. So, yeah, I was there for the very first year, and just watching how it's evolved from, kind of like I said, like a little more regionally based. It's always been in Southern California to now more of a national scope. ESPN televising it, and obviously Nike, the brand itself, is huge. And have, like I said, 24 down to 12 and doing the three-day. They actually call this the Elite 11 Finals. You would think going from 24 to 12 on to Oregon would be the final, but no, this is the actual three-day competition, bringing the 24 in there. And the cool thing, it's not just about, the on-the-field stuff. I don't know, I'm sure Trent went into detail, but, they do a ton of stuff, life skills type stuff, where they're, Michael Gervais, who's one of the world's greatest, sports psychologists, he's out there talking to the kids about, self-talk and breathing and all these other things that, he works with all these elite professional athletes, and including the Seattle Seahawks. They brought in, name escaping me, but a really nice lady who speaks to the kids about, sexual assault and talks to them from that, standpoint, and what you see in college football and how, as a quarterback, you're a leader and off the field and on the field. And then they went down to the beach for a day and worked out with Kerry Wall. She did all kinds of things. And obviously, the on-the-field stuff we see, but there's, chalk talks and having the kids go on the chalk room and write, hey, in this defense, what's your best beater for this coverage? Okay, if you see this, that's part of the evaluation process, too. It's not just who can throw the ball the furthest, who's the most accurate. It's, what kind of, Trent Dilfer's favorite term, functional football intelligence. When you're out there and you have 2.5 seconds to process, and you're in the middle of chaos and there's all kinds of stuff going on around you, who can stay calm in the pocket, make that right read, make that correct decision. And like I said, you only have 2 seconds to do that. That's where you really see the good versus the great quarterback. So, but I would echo Trent. I thought overall, top to bottom, I mean, there wasn't a dud in the group. And there's been years past where you're going, okay, these three or four guys, they don't really belong here. This year, there was no one like that.
Do you think it's appropriate and fair to include a kid that skipped or decided not to compete on Sunday in this Elite 11 group? Because there's some controversy behind that. Tanner McKee, one of the best prospects, and you mentioned it, he was still one of the best-looking prospects out there. He didn't compete in the 7-on-7 portion on Sunday, yet he was still included.
You know, like you mentioned, I think it is kind of controversial. I'm sure some of the kids who didn't make it are probably going to throw that out there and say, hey, how come he only did 2 days? You know, I think the thing with Tanner is he was so good those first 2 days, and I think he left no doubt. You know, I think if he was a bubble guy, then he probably wouldn't have been included. But when he, you know, when you're top two or three kind of going into that last day, and he was willing, you know, he was willing to do whatever he could. You know, that last portion was probably the most important, that 7-on-7 was thrown into a live defense. They were going to actually set that part up for him Saturday night after they did what they called the pro day style workout, which is the combined 20 throws down the field, which Tanner was unreal at. But, you know, by that time, it was like 10 o'clock at night. Everyone's tired. So originally the plan was for him to do his own private 7-on-7 workout, just ran out of time. And, the cool thing was talking to Tanner and his dad for a while, they were totally fine with whatever they decided. You know, they're like, this is our decision. And, you know, it was all Tanner's decision. You know, the dad said, hey, you know, if Tanner wants to do it or not, I'm leaving it up to him, but this is his commitment and it's personal for him. And Tanner said, you know, if I don't make it because I don't do it on Sunday, I'm fine. I'm totally good with that. And, I think, you know, part of the process also isn't just how you did in this workout. It's the whole body of work. It's your tape. It's your upside. It's how you project to the next level. It's all that goes into this. It's not just how you look these 3 days. And obviously, Tanner's film is incredible. His upside is off the charts. So for me, I had no release at all with him making it. He deserved it for me.
Obviously, a lot of interest in Tanner from BYU fans and from people here in Utah. But there's also a local kid, Cammon Cooper, that's just born and raised right here close to campus. Commit to Wazoo that made the cut. Tell us about his showing.
Loved him. You know, I think he was probably the one guy who was maybe that kind of a bubble guy, doesn't really wow you with, you know, the physical. You know, he's not a big arm kid like a McKee, like a Corral, like a Lawrence. He's not a hyper athletic dual threat kid. He's just a really good quarterback in terms of making those, you know, like I mentioned, the functional football intelligence. He's that guy who makes every read. He's smart. And you can just see the whole decision making thing. It can really cripple or almost paralyze some of these guys. And they have to make a quick decision. Okay, that guy's covered. Now what do I do? Some guys just freeze up. You know, with Coop, he was so smooth. And he really killed it on that last day. And I think he was probably a bubble guy going into that last day. But, you know, he was tremendous on Sunday in the 7-on-7 portion of the camp. And, again, I want to say the arm strength isn't huge. It's enough. He doesn't have a weak arm by any stretch. So he can make all the deeper throws, the touch throws, really smooth, accurate. I really like him a lot as a quarterback, and I like the way he carries himself as well. So I thought he was deserving. I mean, Washington State, I think they're getting a steal with him.
Now, how long has the Elite 11 been in place? You said you've been doing it the entire time. When was the first camp that did?
You know what? Was
it like 01 or 2000?
Yes, something like that. I want to say at least 15, 16 years. It's been a while, honestly. I remember that first year, you know, none of those guys are even playing anymore. So it's been a while. I think that first year was a kid named Brock Berlin was the top guy. He went to Evangel Christian, which is that top school in Louisiana. So, I mean, a lot of those guys are no longer even playing. So I want to say at least probably 15, 16, 17 years.
That's kind of what I was thinking. BYU does have some history with Elite 11 quarterbacks, top-notch quarterbacks, but I wouldn't call it good history. Let me give you kind of an example of what I'm talking about. BYU landed Ben Olsen. Ben Olsen after his mission transferred. Ben Olsen, I mean, he was in my recruiting class. He and I were roommates. I mean, one of the most amazing talents that I've ever seen with my own eyes, right? Just amazing. and ended up transferring away from BYU. BYU also landed a guy. I don't know if you remember him. His name was Mike Affleck out of Temp View High School.
Was he an Elite 11?
He was an Elite 11 guy. Mike Affleck, kind of a big-bodied, like Jared Lorenzen, young-looking body, big-time arm out of Utah. BYU landed him. Fizzled, didn't land. And then also, you know, Jake Heaps. As you look back at all of these and the guys that have landed, the guys that have made it, and the guys that haven't, is it ever possible to kind of project which ones, how much it transfers into college, or any kind of inkling as to at BYU how some of those guys haven't quite panned out?
Yeah, I mean, and don't forget Tanner Mangum was also MVP.
Yeah, and Tanner. And now Tanner's story isn't finished. You know, it's still being written.
Sure,
and, you know, Tanner
sure.
could kind of
yeah.
Tanner could, you know, he could still, at this point, he could still bust. At this point, he could still end up being one of the better quarterbacks to ever come to BYU. We don't know for sure. But BYU does have a good history of landing these guys, but we are yet to see that top-tier production from any of the ones that they've been able to land.
Yeah, and I wasn't meaning Tanner was a bust by any stretch. I was just saying he's another BYU commit who participated. You know, it's really hard to project. I mean, honestly, you mentioned Ben, and he was MVP of the camp, and it wasn't close.
And he was every
honestly,
bit of the hype. I saw him with my own eyes.
Oh, goodness.
He could do it all. And I still am blown away that he could, that at UCLA, I don't know if it was an OC thing or an offense. I don't know if his mentality changed, if it was him or injuries. I have no idea how he didn't pan out. One of the most elite athletes.
Was he a shotgun quarterback in high school?
Ever.
Was he a shotgun quarterback in high school?
I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
No. He was under center taking drops. I mean, he was everything. Everything you're talking about. I mean, it's funny. You know, most lefties, whether it's a golf swing or hitting a baseball, they always look so smooth and effortless. But with Ben, I mean, he had an overpowering arm. I mean, he had a cannon being a southpaw. Good athlete and really good high school basketball player. I mean, he was the real deal. You know, I don't have an answer. You know, UCLA, you talk to different people, they'll tell you different things. Obviously, he had several injuries that really hurt him. You know, I think Ben was, and you know him, he was extremely mature for a kid. And, you know, when he got to UCLA, obviously, he came up to Mission, so he was, you know, a couple years older. I don't know if he related that well to the guys. I think there was a backup quarterback named Pat Callen, who he was kind of the guy in the locker room, where I think Ben was just, you know, he was a little more mature. So I think that was maybe a little bit of an issue. You mentioned the offensive coordinator there. They didn't have, you know, a dynamic offense in play at that time. And then obviously, you know, it has to be said, they also say, you know, Ben struggled in terms of just being quick with as far as decisions. He was a one-read guy, and if that one guy wasn't covered, he struggled going through progressions. He wasn't the quickest guy as far as mental. And that's something that we see all the time. And I think for me, you know, I've been doing this for such a long time. You know, when you're young and you're looking at quarterbacks, everyone's kind of blown away or wowed by the big arm, right? It's like the pretty girl. Mm-hmm. You notice her first. But, the personality, you know, with that, I think the quarterback just being quick and smart and deliberate. And look at all the great BYU quarterbacks, whether it's, you know, it's the Detmers or the Steve Youngs. They didn't have, you know, a Dan Marino, Aaron Rodgers type arm, but they were so smart. And they knew where to go with the football. And I think that's what I'm starting to realize over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years is that stuff that it's so hard to measure that. And I think that's why you see so many guys, you come to the Elite 11 and you'll say, okay, this is the dude. Look at how he throws.
Yeah.
But it's those guys that can go and pick up a college offense. How quickly can they do that? And how do they deal with pressure? If you're a high school quarterback, there is no pressure, right? Because you're so much better than everybody else. If you have this rush comes at you, you just run away from it for the most part. In college, man, you got to be mobile, and you got to be able to process really quickly. And those that can excel, those that can't struggle. But it's hard to see and know, okay, which ones can do all that kind of thing. So I hope Tanner does well. He was one of my favorite guys, you know, back in the day when he came in with Jameis. Like I mentioned, they were co-MVPs, and obviously we know how well Jameis did. So and I think it has to be said as well, you know, going on a mission for 2 years and coming back, you know, that's got to hurt your development just a little bit, right? Everyone else is kind of playing and getting reps and learning the offense, and you take 2 years off. And I know they're still able to, you know, to do some things, but you come back and you haven't really done a whole lot of team football for a couple of years. And, you know, Tanner, he's going right out of high school. I know some guys go for a year and then leave. Tanner's going right out of high school. So it'll be interesting. You know, when he comes back in the 2020, he'll be part of that 2020 class. You know, it'll be interesting to see just physically where he's at, mentally where he's at, how hungry he is for the game and how quickly he can pick up an offense at whatever school he chooses.
Great points.
Greg Biggins, national recruiting analyst for Fox Sports and Scout.com here on ESPN 960.
Greg, I think a big part of it has to do with the fit of, you mentioned the culture at UCLA, but I also think just the offense that they have there. That's why I think Cam and Cooper, I know his family, they've been very calculated about picking Wazoo as an offense that fits his style, setting him up for success. And a lot of parents, a lot of players think, if I'm a great player, I'm going to be a great player no matter where I go. But a lot of times the system dictates what type of potential you can tap into. Talk to me about McKee and how you think that he could fit into this new Ty Detmer pro-style offense at BYU. Do you see him as the type of quarterback that fits well into this under-center, okay, pro-style offense that BYU has implemented?
So, first off, 100% agree. You know, again, talking to not just quarterbacks, but talking to kids, and so many of them get in batchway with, I got to pick the biggest school for me.
Yep.
Right?
Like,
and yep. It's not about picking the biggest name. Find the best fit for you, whether it's a running back, what scheme fit is best for you. If you're a receiver, you know, do you want to go somewhere and block, you know, 80% of the time, or do you want to go catch the ball? And I think Cooper's going to do great at Wazoo. You know, Tanner, it's interesting because he plays at Centennial High School. I'm not sure you've seen any of his high school film. But it's 100% shotgun. You know, it's shotgun spread. He does not take drops at all. And it's going to be 100% an adjustment for him. Now, watching him this past weekend, I mean, everything they did, not everything, but a lot of what they were doing was drops, three-step, five-step. I didn't see any sevens, but a lot of three and five. And he works hard at it. I mean, you can see that he's gotten better at it. He's still not super efficient with it. I mean, his steps are really small and choppy. As opposed to, you know, you've taken a five, you want, you know, two small, three big. You know, he's going to get better. For me, I think Tanner is so good. I think he fits any system. So whether it's being in an NFL pro style, whether it's a spread, obviously, you know, throw out the option, no one runs that anymore. But I think he's good enough. And he's a good enough athlete. I mean, he can run. And I think that people, you know, that surprises people because of how tall and lean he is. He's 6'5", 6'6", kid, but he can really take off and run. So he's a good athlete. I think that will be an adjustment. But, shoot, hopefully, you know, for those 2 years, if he does choose BYU, which I've always felt like it was going to be hard for him not to. I think BYU, Texas, Washington are probably his top three right now. But if he does choose BYU, hopefully for those 2 years he's gone, he's been taking drops every single day. So when he comes back, you know, he's proficient in that.
Maybe they could make his companion like a center or something.
Yeah.
Take some under centers every morning while they do scripture study.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like that. I like that. So hopefully, and Tanner, and he really wants to be good. So I think he will practice at that, and he'll be just fine.
Who's the most successful Elite 11 quarterback ever?
Wow, that is a great question.
I mean, there's Heisman winners, right?
I'm trying to.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, yeah, Heisman. I mean, and how much do you weight the Heisman Trophy,
you know,
to
the NFL ranks
too?
In comparison
to
college ranks?
Yeah,
like, there are guys that win Heismans that don't, you know, and then there are guys that are decent in college that end up winning championships in the NFL.
Exactly.
Right?
So how would you gauge it? Who would be the most decorated? Who's the most successful Elite 11 quarterback ever? I mean, you can name off whoever you'd like. I'm not sure who the most successful ones are, but I'm sure there's a bevy.
Yeah, no doubt. There's been a handful of Heisman winners. I'm trying to just think NFL, and I'm kind of just thinking, you know, top quarterbacks NFL. Obviously, Tom Brady, Elite 11 was after he came out. Aaron Rodgers came as a counselor, but he was just a guy in high school. As funny as that sounds, God, what other NFL? I mean, for Heisman recently, I mean, there was, you know, Matt Leinart won a Heisman. I think Jameis Winston got one, or a national title at least. They were tremendous after Elite 11 camp. But I'm trying to think of NFL success stories. I'm sure there's been a handful, but right now my mind, just being with these kids the last three days, I can only almost see just these 2018 class as opposed to some of the NFL guys. I'll have to get back to you next time we talk, hopefully. But I'm sure there has been several. Shoot, you know, how can you miss when you get, you know, top 12 guys? Although, again, it kind of goes to our earlier point. And a lot of the most successful guys, not just in college, but NFL, you know, are guys who either are late bloomers, they came from smaller schools, they came in hungry. You know, a lot of these 4- and 5-star recruits kind of come into a college and they think they've already arrived. And so it's those guys that kind of came in, your Ben Roethlisberger types, who went to Miami of Ohio, or did you see a lot of stories like that? So I know we've missed on a lot of guys who just were just under the radar as high school kids and then blossomed late. That happens every single year.
Yeah, indeed. I'm going to start breaking this down. I'm looking at it may have been Tim Tebow, actually, the most successful. I'm looking through the rosters right now.
Yeah, college-wise, for sure. I know Tim didn't do a whole lot in the pros, but no, he was there. In fact, the same year we had Tim Tebow, Matt Stafford was there, and I think Stafford was the MVP of that camp. So obviously,
Tim had a better college career
than Tim. Tim had the better college career, and Stafford still doing some good things in the NFL. So that was a really good year that
Andrew
year.
Luck. Andrew Luck's a part of that mix too.
He wasn't bad, right?
If you're talking about college hype, Jamarcus Russell was in there. He had a good college career. Big time bust in the NFL, but there's some big time names. These guys,
What do you think with Jamarcus? Yeah, funny thing. We can probably talk all day about this. You guys are bringing back all kinds of memories for me. Back when we had Jamarcus, and again, I say we because I was with student sports at that time. But we could tell that Jamarcus was so physically gifted. But and this is huge too. Never really loved football. Basketball was his love. Even at that camp, it's all he talked about. All he wanted to do. And it didn't seem like he had a passion for football. He just kind of did it because he was good at it. So we always had a concern that, what's going to happen with Jamarcus when he gets in the league? He'll be a first-round draft pick, millions of dollars. He needs to have a really strong support group around him to kind of keep him motivated because he was never a guy who was just super passionate about football at that high school time. He was just really gifted and talented, but he loved basketball. So when he kind of went down that, number one overall pick, Raiders just never panned out, we kind of unfortunately said, we kind of saw it coming.
Yeah. And people love to talk about the busts, but at the same time, you have Matt Stafford, you have Jake Locker, you have Josh Freeman, you have a lot of guys.
Vince Young.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of names of guys that that did make it work. Ryan Mallett. Guys that not only had great college careers, but were high draft picks and stuck around in the NFL for a decent amount of time.
You know who else was an Elite 11 quarterback?
Taj Boyd.
Tui Tama.
Will Tui Tama. There's a couple Samoans. I'm a Samoan guy.
So I bring it up.
Tui Tama. Tui Asisopo was like the MVP back in Tui Asisopo. Nephew of Marcus Tui Asisopo was the MVP back in, 2003 or 4 or something like that.
Oh, so good. He was a baller. One of those guys who no matter what the competition would have been, whether it was, playing checkers or football or, he was going to win everything he did. But he went the baseball route. I kind of always wondered, what if he would have chose football? Because he was a really good football player. But, he went the baseball route.
He's been making good money
all
playing
these
baseball.
Names, I have stories for almost every name you're throwing out there. This is fun for me.
Greg, we got
to
let
you
go.
Have you back on again.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back on again. Greg, thank you so much for all you do. Great interview.
Absolutely.
And let's do it again.
Sounds good. Thanks, fellas. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you. Greg Biggins, National Recruiting Analyst for Fox Sports at Scout.com. Did you get a filling done by your dentist and it still hurts? Get a second opinion from a biomedically trained dentist at Dental Pros of Utah. Rebuild your teeth layer by layer with Kevlar fibers. You won't ever have tooth sensitivity ever again. DentalProsOfUtah.com, 801-756-0360. That's 801-756-0360, DentalProsOfUtah.com.